Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, you're listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. Located at the base of the mighty Sierra Nevada range in Northern California, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio coming to you from Studio B on blogtalkradio.com. Special Friday night Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, and I've got a very dear friend of mine coming on here very shortly. It's Sharon Coyle from Journey Paranormal, and she is now the proprietor of Rolling Hills Asylum, and it's just an amazingly haunted place there in New York, I believe. And I have posted the link to that particular site if you want to learn more. It's www.rollinghillsasylum.com. And, I see a note from Elizabeth, and she says, okay, thank you, Elizabeth. Appreciate that. And so we're going to have folks popping in, and I see, Dan's with us. We got Blue Goose out there in Tennessee, and we got Elizabeth out there in the wilds of Arizona. And yours truly, John Almada, here in Shingle Springs, and it was a beautiful day out here in the Sierras. I am a little under the weather. I seem to have gotten a little bit of a stomach bug, so I am continuing on. I took some medicine, and I am going to tough it out and get through this. Had my dad in surgery here 2 days ago also. He had and Dominica is here. Hi, Dom. Good to see you, my sweet. And so we have some of the gang is showing up here, and good to see everybody coming in. Yeah, for the lurkers out there, hello to you. But my dad had his gallbladder out 2 days ago, and that man is looking like death warmed over right now. He is looking pretty grim. He's got pain etched on him, and we're feeding him all kinds of pain meds and keeping him doped up pretty good. He gets pretty loopy once the stuff kicks in. It's fun to poke fun at him, so. He's not altogether all there when we give the stuff to him and all that, but God, what else is going on? Oh, I have in my hot little hands, I ordered back about 2-3 weeks ago, and you hear it kicking on here, I ordered the Monotronics full spectrum camera, and I have now in my hands with the red cover that I asked them to give me, not the boring silver one, I got the red one. So I have a HD capability with full spectrum in infrared and ultraviolet, and they are going to be able to do some really interesting things with this. And combined with some of our technology we use for instant anywhere tripods that are not tripods, they connect to anything. It's a new technique we're working with. This is going to work out really good for us for doing spot checks and seeing if we can pick up an entity out there in something other than normal wavelengths. So we are really tricked out with this, and the entire team, I think, is going to be excited to get their hands on this thing and take a look at it and give it a try. So we are just, I got it first, huh? So we are looking forward to that. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Rolling Hills Asylum first, and then we'll bring my friend on, Ms. Sharon. And her husband, Jerry, is also the other proprietor, so they are currently refitting and working on the asylum. They took it over and started doing all sorts of things to it, and they're actively working with the community and doing things to improve the place. And so it's got a new lease on life, and if anybody can make this thing work, it's Sharon. She knows what she's doing, and she comes from Southern California. I ran Journey Paranormal Society, and I actually met her aboard the USS Hornet in 2008 on Halloween. And from that moment on, it's been a friendship that's gone on. And through her, I met Spencer Hughes, who is now a key member of my team. He's the host of Fox Across America. And so, you know, quality people getting together all around this lady. And she knows what she's doing in the paranormal. Some of the things that go on at Rolling Hills, we're going to learn a lot more. She's going to have some of the team dialing in. And from what I can tell, though, there are a lot of spirits there, and it's, seeing things is not unusual. It's the norm. And a little bit about the history, just real quickly. If you go out and look at her page, matter of fact, I'm just going to put it up here on the website for everybody, and we'll paste that. And I see Mystic Girl 34 has come in. Hello, Mystic. It started off as, I guess, a poorhouse back in the early 1800s, and there are some pretty old photos showing what it was like. And what they've done on this website has been really well laid out, showing the history and some of the things that have gone on in the past there. So Sharon has been really hard at work with the website development. It's a nice, clean layout, and they've got events all over the place. So we're going to be learning more. We're going to go ahead and bring her on, and let me run over to the netbook and click the right thing. Sharon, are you with us?
Hello, John. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm improving. I've taken I took some stuff to help my stomach calm down. But I am a trooper. I'm just going to keep going. I've even investigated sick, so I can host my own show sick. So by God, I'm here.
Well, you're the hardest working paranormal person on the West Coast I know.
Me?
Yeah, you're always doing something between the paranormal and working on your farm and everything else. You're constantly on the go.
Yeah, it's today it was funny because I just paid off the Mustang and I spent the day looking at a new truck. I'm buying a truck specifically for the purpose of investigation work and getting a Ranger with extended cab. So I've been out to talk credit union and talking to all them. And so I've got a loan agreement I'm working on to get that all squared away. And we're building a teardrop trailer to attach to the Stang and the Mustang too. But we're going to be doing all kinds of things. So yeah, I'm working hard, but you're working harder.
I was going to ask you about your teardrop. I love teardrop trailers. That's so funny.
Yeah, a teardrop. For those of you that don't know what a teardrop trailer is, it's a trailer in the shape of a teardrop, literally. They're very aerodynamic, and they're extremely light, and they're extremely strong. They were first showed up in about the early 30s and were very popular from the 30s up into the late 50s. Then they seemed to just go away, and you would only see them occasionally where, somebody would take one and refit it. And then all of a sudden, when the great gas crisis happened, people rediscovered these things. And they are cute as a bug. I mean, these things are just neat. They any car can pull them. They're that light, 800, 900 pounds. And what I'm doing with mine is I've got the deck started to be built, and I'm getting set to start working on the sides and then begin all the cabinet work and all that. And what we're going to be doing with that is it's being built with investigation in mind, which on one side there will be a video and audio feed panel. Well, I can literally pull into a site, especially outdoor investigations, which is what we do, and pull in and hook up all the video runs and do all the hard links and just be instantly online and running an investigation. So that's the purpose behind this particular teardrop. I don't know if anybody's ever done this with one of these, so you know, maybe we're doing it first, but you know, I know I'm just going to have a good time with it.
Well, for people that don't know you, you're like, 6'5", and what's really hilarious, people, is that this teardrop is teeny, teeny, tiny. I don't know how you ever fit in there, because don't they have a sleeping quarters in there, too?
Well, actually, I'm extending it somewhat, and I'm actually 6'1.5", so I'm
Oh, okay, you seem so much bigger.
Yeah, I'm actually one of the shorter ones in my family. I, my great-grandfather was an FBI agent, and he was 6'5", and...
Wow.
Extremely fearsome. Yeah, he was. He's a grandfather agent of the agency, and extremely fearsome guy. But yeah, a lot of those people came from the Midwest, and they were real tall, big, giant people, and Scottish. You know, they had that giant thing going on. But I'm building this one with an extension out. Probably I'm going to weld on another couple of feet to it, and see if that improves things for me, because I do want the room in there, but. Yeah, you know, it's coming along. It's going to take another about 3 months of work, you know, and I don't know half of what I'm doing as usual.
Oh, please. You know a lot. You're very smart.
Well, it's...
You are a rocket scientist.
What's that?
I said, and you are a rocket scientist.
That's the part. You know, it was funny. I was at a this was back in just about 2 years after the earthquake down in L.A. I think it was that one in 04 that hit. And I was down. It was Northridge. And I was down there. I was down there on business, and I was touring a company that did recording technologies, and that's a lot of my background is in recording techniques and systems and things like that. Data recorders. And so we were there touring a factory and talking with a really smart guy, and he was sitting there saying all this stuff about, you know, the technology, and he says, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know you can do this or that. And me and my boss look at each other, and we poked our hands up, and he says, what? And he says, but we are rocket scientists.
Hilarious.
He's like looking at us like, and they didn't have a comeback. He's like, yeah. And I go, okay, so, you know, it's cool. We're rocket scientists.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, no, I'm not a rocket scientist in the traditional sense. I grew up around them, but you know, I do. I'm an information scientist, and that's I'm very comfortable there. Those guys that do the rocketry, lots of fire and bad things happen sometimes out there, so stay away from it. Yeah. But anyway, it's your night, my sweet. It's your night.
Well, it's been so long since we talked. We digress, and we're boring everybody. I'm sure they want to hear about Rolling Hills.
Oh, well, you know, yeah, it's been a while since we talked, but you've been like, the last time I talked with you, you were working on cleaning up out there and getting that place in order and all the things that were going on, you know, and I think you had a power issue going on and all that, so.
But, oh, you know, yeah, it's ongoing.
How did you find out you had this interest in Rolling Hills? Let's start with the beginning.
Well, it's pretty funny because actually it was the summer before you and I met. I came out here in June of 08 for a Darkness Radio event, and I had 3 nights out here that I was investigating. And the first night I did a private investigation, and it was with Stacey Jones and another woman and myself, and there were a few other people in the building, which is, it's a 54,000-square-foot property. And I had some amazing, amazing experiences that very first night. I mean, I've never been to a place like this ever. Full-blown shadow people. I mean, walking out and blocking out lights, hands that manifested and touched people, and I got photographs of it. I mean, just amazing, amazing, amazing activity. And after I left there, after being here for 3 days, no matter what I had done after that, I always revisited in my mind the experiences that I had here and my evidence and photographs and EVPs and so forth. And you know, and as you know, I had Journey Paranormal Society. I also had a meetup group called Start the Journey, and that had 250 people in it. And so I was busy doing other investigations and other things, but almost weekly I'd be drawn to looking at my evidence. And it just always was in my mind. And last year I heard it was going up for sale and or closing down completely. And I had this really strange reaction. I just literally started crying. And it was like, it wasn't just like, oh, teary, oh, how sad. It was like, oh, my God, what's going to happen to the spirits here? What's going to happen to the property? You know, it's going to go in disarray. It's going to, you know, it's going to get deteriorated. It's going to close down. It's going to fall apart. It could get bulldozed down for all I know, whatever. And I called my husband at work, and he actually thought someone had died. I was crying so bad. And at that point, I thought, you know, that's not normal to be that attached to a building like that and or a property. And so he suggested I go out and look at it again, and I did. And then he came out and looked at it with me, and we jumped in with both feet. And here I am.
Now, you went through all, yeah, and I remember some of the stuff that went on. You were going through all sorts of ministrations as you were working on it, and you were talking to me off and on, and it was like,
yeah.
I was just waiting with bated breath going, is she going to get it? Is she going to get it? And when you got it, I was just so happy for you. I mean, that just is, it's a historic, you know, location, and just the, you know, just what I've heard about it, you know, with the sheer amount of just spectral activity that goes on in there, it's like, it's, you can't go in there without seeing something, you know. And I'm sure the EVPs are just nuts in there.
It's absolutely incredible. I mean, daily. I mean, I'm in here every day. Every day I'm here. And during the day and at night, and I'm here all the time. And during the day, you'll hear disembodied voices. You'll hear the furniture moving. I mean, broad daylight. There's a screaming woman that she'll scream periodically and like loud, blood-curdling scream when there's no one else in the building. I mean, it's just completely active. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know what? I hate to do this. I've got one of my team members that they're buzzing in because they're downstairs locked. Let me just holler to somebody. I'm really sorry, everybody. Hold on 1 second. Can someone let Bob and Jeff in?
I can just take a little break there if she needs to.
I don't know where anybody is. Sorry. I'm actually at Rolling Hills, and I have a ghost hunt going on, and I'm trying to talk to you, and a couple of the team members are downstairs at the door trying to get buzzed in.
I'll make you a deal. You go ahead. I'll take a short break because I need to grab a little water myself. We'll just take a minute, and you go down and do what you got to do.
I'm going to go let them in because they're going to be beeping in on this phone. And I'm really sorry, everyone. I'll be right back.
Okay, no problem. We'll go on to break right now. We'll be right back.
Okay, thanks, John.
No problem. You are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, live on blogtalkradio.com.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. It's, hey, this is real life, and we're the flexible radio show. We know
hilarious.
People have stuff going on. So I said, you're my friend. I'm not going to sit there and give you a hard time. Good Lord.
Oh, I feel so bad. Anyways, I don't know what I was saying, but yeah, so I mean, it was a lot of trial and tribulations getting here, but I really feel like I was picked for this place. It picked me. I didn't pick it.
Yeah. I agree with that. And the spirits there are really no, you know, one of the things I remember you telling me about was that when you had just got the place, that they, you know, there was actually some activity caught or something where the spirits were saying things about, oh, she's the new owner.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I bought myself like the mother of all birthday presents, because I bought it on October 23rd and my birthday is the 26th. And so the day after I came in here, after I bought it with a couple of non-paranormal people that I know, and we were just taking a walk through, and I had a recording going and everything else, and in 20 minutes I had 17 EVPs. It was absolutely crazy. And, yeah, one of them was a woman going, she's the owner. So, I mean, they're very well aware. They're very intelligent. It's an intelligent haunting, and it's pretty amazing. It's a pretty amazing place.
Now, with everything you're going through with the refits, and I know you went through the electrical difficulties and all that stuff, but and I don't know if there's any such thing as a normal day at Rolling Hills.
No, there's no normal day. There's no normalcy at all. I mean, every day, you know, you start off with a list of priorities and you know, it shifts by the moment. I mean, it's constantly in a state of flux. I mean, it's a 183-year-old property, and there's always something different going on. I mean, it's crazy.
What? Let's just take a memorable day from the most recent past. Let's just do that, and we'll let's just play a day that you remember well, and some of the stuff that happened, and just go from there.
I'm sorry, John. Can you say that one more time? The phone broke up. I didn't hear the whole thing.
Pick a day that in the most recent past, you know, something that's really stuck out as one of the days that just kind of sticks out in your mind with your typical atypical things that happen, and just describe some of that.
Paranormally or just in the life of living here?
Both. I think it'd be great to hear both.
Oh, God, the life of living here. Weird things happen on a daily basis. Oh, my God. We have the Boy Scouts here helping to do a project and help clean up some of the land and the property and, you know, do some landscaping work. I mean, everything's all overgrown. And it's amazing. People were just stopping out of the woodwork, driving by, and they were seeing the Boy Scouts, and they pull over. Well, this one gentleman stopped. He was about 68 years old on a Harley, and he looked like he was about 54. He pulled over, and he talks to my property manager, who's one of our team members, Jeff, and he goes, oh, you know what? He says, my wife used to work here when it was a nursing home back in the 70s, and she knew this person and that person and this person, and she would love to come back and talk to you guys. He'd never stopped here before. He lives down the road. In all the years that he's been by here since she quit or the nursing home closed down in the 70s, he had never stopped here. Of all the previous owners, there's like three previous owners, and he never stopped. So he did bring her by later on that afternoon just for a few minutes, and we're supposed to be having another meeting going forward. But she knew some of the famous ghosts here when they were actually alive and patients. She knew Roy Cross, which is a very famous spirit that we have here. She knew Mary. She knew a lot of the people that we are in contact now in the spirit world. And it's pretty phenomenal. So I'm looking forward to her coming back out here, spending some time. We're going to interview her. But things like that happen on a daily basis. People just pop out of the woodwork and are showing up and giving me these huge gifts of their knowledge and their memories.
Now, things that happen there, like, you know, that whole power situation, that one really got me. When I called you, you sounded like you'd been through the mill. And I was like, I felt so bad for you. I was going, oh, my God, I think you had to move back into a hotel room or something.
Yeah, I'm still there. We're having, now we've got plumbing issues. So we had the power put in, and now we're working with the plumbing. And the plumbing should be completed this week. And hopefully I'll be in there in the next week or so, 100%. So, but yeah, it's been kind of a challenge. You know, my house was actually the woodworking shop. It was built in it was one of the original buildings on the property, 1827. And other people were living in it previously, but things weren't done properly. That's all I'm going to say. Things weren't done properly. And there was a lot of issues that, you know, of course, anything that can and will happen to me. And so everything kind of like fell apart at the same time. You know, it's like buying a used vehicle. You know, if something's going to fall apart, it's going to fall apart on my vehicle. So,
Well, so it's been basically you're breathing new life into everything then, and it's, you know, at least it's getting done right from the beginning. I mean, you're going through all the real discoveries of what you really have, you know. But what's happening with all this refit and all these things? Is it really kicking up the activity in that particular building or on the property?
The whole property. It's so insane. I mean, we've actually taken over 3 tons of trash, pure trash out of the buildings, and move things around and created some of the rooms all over again. We have the blueprints and we have photographs. And so we're going through and trying to recreate some of the old rooms, like the chapel. There was a chapel in the East Wing, and it was pretty much an empty room. And we discovered some photographs that showed how it was set up, and there was so much stuff lying around in the building that some of my team members went and gathered all the pews and the different double-seater chairs that look like pews and built an altar, and ever since we did that, the place has been so active. I mean, incredible active. You'll hear the pews moving while you're sitting in there and you're the only ones in there. You'll hear disembodied voices. There'll be light anomalies. I mean, it's just pretty incredible. We've reconstructed the shock therapy room in a fashion. We've built a nursery in the infirmary, and it's just, it's really just stirring up all the activity. It's been pretty phenomenal.
Do you feel that it's in a positive way, that they're happy that you're trying to bring the memory of the place back to life, and, you know, with all the work you're doing to restore it, are they pleased with what you're up to?
I hope so. I think a lot of them are. I don't know if, you know, all of them are, but I think many of them are. I'm getting good results. We've had groups in here and been investigating with them. They've asked us to investigate with them, and we'll hear disembodied voices and people talking and laughing and men and women, and so much so that in this one particular incident, one of the gentlemen that was in the group investigating, I didn't know he was a former police officer. He was so convinced someone had broken into the building, he made me go around with him, not once but twice, because he was convinced someone had broken in. So that's how loud the voices are, and that's how active it is.
I thought I had something going on here with this place, but, I mean, how many distinct spirits do you think you have out there?
Thousands. I mean, you have to remember, the property actually has been in existence with something on the property since mid to late 1700s. So there's a tavern on here. In 1827...
Yeah.
The county built the Genesee County Poor Farm, which was the original property here. There were 200 acres. It was completely self-sufficient. They had farmland. They had all kinds of cattle and pigs and orchards and everything. And it took in all types of society. It was like the first welfare system. You'd have widows and orphans and sick people and mentally disabled and physically disabled and tuberculosis people and drunkards and Civil War vets, and everybody and anybody would come and live here. And as time went on, it had different metamorphoses. I mean, they added an infirmary. Some criminal people would end up here, murderers or slight criminals. And as time went on again, they added another building, and it ended up being a nursing home. I mean, it just kept evolving over the time until it closed down in 1972. And it sat empty for 20 years. And then another family bought it and opened up a carriage museum, and then an antiques mall. And then the previous owner discovered the paranormal activity, and then I'm here now. It's been going on for 183 years. And the Historical Society has documented most of the inhabitants here, at least the ones that they have records on. I mean, there's over 1,900 documented deaths. There's a potter's field. I really believe there's thousands of entities here in all types.
Yeah, I remember you talking. I saw pictures of the place I think you sent me that had the actual grave, you know, the graveyard out there, and where there's just, and there's no stones for, I guess, a lot of these people. So you could be planting a garden and turn up with a thigh bone.
Well, in theory, I mean, you have to remember 183 years ago, I'm sure there are probably not much left. I mean, a lot of people were just thrown out and buried in fields. I mean, you'd be lucky if you got a pine box. Of course, there was no, I imagine there wasn't really any sort of embalming or anything going on. So, I mean, in theory, there's probably not much left of anybody out there. But, yeah, I mean, it's had its sadness. It's had its up times. I mean, you know, you get a variety of people and personalities and types of people living here. You're going to have good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. And I don't mean ugly physically. I mean just ugly personality-wise. They used to sell some of the children that were here, some of the orphans, and to the farmers to help the farmers who maybe had lost their wives to an illness or death or of some sort. And the children would be sold off and would help the farmer raise his kids and work the farm. And yeah. So there's been a lot of different things that have happened out here.
Now, I've got a question from the professor in our chat room, and he asks, ask about CSI night.
CSI night? Oh, there was a strange thing that happened, and we're not quite sure what the situation is. I kind of hesitated in bringing it up. I'm really not going to bring it up. We had to have the police come out here. We found something, some blood, and they had to come out and investigate, and they actually brought up the CSI. And there was a handprint on the wall that wasn't there, and there was blood on the floor that wasn't there, and like the night before, and it just kind of materialized. And they ran, actually CSI came out. I mean, they were here, the police were here for like hours, and they ran tests, and they can't identify what it is. It's not blood. And it's not animal or human, but it's not, they can't identify what it is either. And it's just a strange situation. And actually, one of the detectives had purposely asked me, was this particular area of the building a known paranormal hotspot? Which I was really delighted that he asked me that, honestly, because most of the police that come out are either mildly amused or completely skeptic of this place. So for the detective to ask me that at least he had some sort of a belief in this whole situation.
I have been seeing in just my little travels as I go along more acceptance in the police departments and the sheriffs with regard to these things, because they see so much in the terms of the calls they get for false alarms, different things in museums, and they're starting to kind of put two and two together, you know, with regard to what they're seeing out there in the field, and realizing that some of this could be that kind of thing. And it, you know, it's, these guys are trained observers, so I don't, you know, yeah, you're going to run into your types that are not you know, that are skeptical. They're never going to believe anything. But then you've got the guys that are the real observers, the, you know, the real detective types, and they are going to be able to open their minds to alternative explanations, and you're lucky you got a guy like that. Yeah.
Well, it's so funny you should mention that, because, you know, as far as I've always been interested as far as, you know, how they use psychics to help solve crimes and things, you know, quite often. And I always thought it'd be really interesting to go and, you know, during, like, after a murder or a missing person or something of that sort, go in there and try to get some EVPs and see if someone can actually find out, you know, what had happened during that crime. You know, if the spirit, if the person that, you know, has been killed or whatever the case may be, if they're still there and they can actually tell what happened. And I always thought that would be really interesting. I'm sure it wouldn't be submissible in court, but if it led to another, you know, more solid evidence that could help in the case, I think it'd be worthwhile trying.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that, you know, just on the basis of the, you know, the EVPs we picked up, you know, through our investigations, it's absolutely clear that highly emotive events impress on the environment. And so you're going to get these kind of things where, somebody, you know, let's say it's a murder, with all the, you know, somebody in a defensive position, you know, fighting for their lives, that's going to leave a psychic. And they're going to be, the spirit will be around more than likely. To be able to do that. And I really think that in probably 20 years, there will be a revolution in the way science looks at the paranormal. And that may very well become an investigative technique that is accepted. It may not, it may be challenged. You know, you'll have the skeptics that will still be, you know, fighting it. But, You know, the thing is, I find is that's interesting is that the planet itself, the Earth that we live on, is mostly composed of iron. And if you look at the old-fashioned tape, you know, before we get into all these digital devices, they used ferric oxide on a polyester substrate tape, if you will, and that's how we recorded things. And when you have a whole planet made out of this stuff, you know, you have kind of a half the storage mechanism for storing some of these, you know, static things that people, you know, are saying is EVP playback, you know, non-intelligent playback. And to me, it just makes absolute sense that you could get that. So just a lifetime in the recording business, that's my personal theory, that you're, you know, some of what we see out there in the field is some of this, and it's a mechanism that with the right testing, we'll be able to prove that it's not going to be paranormal anymore. It'll just be normal and intruding up to the paranormal. And but you know what you're talking about though too is the intelligent spirits that are going to be able to come in and say it was that guy, you know. And
yeah,
I mean,
well, then like I said, they'll never. I mean, I would doubt if they'd ever be able to use that in court. But if it leads to something more solid that is more acceptable evidence, I think it'd be very worthwhile trying. I mean,
yeah,
I would definitely,
I mean,
you know, would want to have that occur if something, God forbid, happened to me. Come and find me. I will tell you who did it.
That's not going to happen to you. We're going to make sure of that. You know, I mean, you're going to be trying to build this amazing institution back up to, you know, this. You know, and that's the thing that I'm kind of looking at what you're doing. You're going through and you're actually in the unenviable position of you just bought a ship that's still sailing the oceans. You're changing out all the substructure. Putting new engines in, you're refitting the outside, you're painting it while it's underwater, and you're still sailing and you're trying to make money off of it. And that's kind of the thing I'm looking at going, how the hell is she doing this? And where are you going? What do you plan to do with this place?
Well, it's kind of evolving on its own. Well, I want to continue, obviously, with the paranormal, and I'd like to eventually have a real good research center. I mean, there's so much activity here. I mean, I've only been open a couple of months, and I already have people coming back multiple times. I mean, people are just enchanted by this place, and just it totally gets under your skin, and it grabs you, and it doesn't let go, and not in a bad way, in a good way.
Yeah.
And because of the variety of activity here, I think it'd be really worthwhile trying to develop a real good lab and really start documenting and doing what they do at the Queen Mary. I don't know, like the God, I can't think of their name now. The head team that does the investigation of the Queen Mary just went out of my mind. Sorry, guys. I think it's Brian and Pat Wheelock.
Yeah.
And they go through systematically, and they've been investigating the Queen Mary for years, and they still have years ahead of them. But they're going systematically, room by room, and really thoroughly investigating and documenting each room. And that hasn't really been done here, as far as, I mean, of course, people come here and they investigate the place to death, but no one is documenting everything, and really correlating and sharing information and saying, okay, this is what we got in this room. Let's do the complete EMF sweeps. Let's do the temperature readings. Let's keep going and hitting the same room at different times of the day, different times of the night, and correlating stuff. And I think that, you know, there's so much activity here that we could really do something and maybe find a common thread or a piece to the puzzle that might open up another door or another question. But I think it's worthwhile trying to pursue. That's the big picture. The long and the short of it is, you know, we're going to have some classes. We're having some special events. We're getting some film production in here. It's a great location for filming, for doing still photography shoots, fashion shoots, because of the, you know, the juxtaposition of the old and the new, you know, high fashion in this, like, decaying place. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can be done here. You know, I would like to have wine and cheese festivals. I want to get the general public to come during the day and get them pulled in so they want to come back at night.
How about weddings?
Absolutely. We actually, two of our team members actually got married here before me. Before I came on board, but they actually did get married here. And I would love to do paranormal weddings here. I think it'd be really great.
That would be like a big thing. You, Yeah, I mean, given the amount of people, especially out here on Blog Talk, you know, that would be like a big thing to promote. It's like, you in love? You believe in ghosts? Go over here. This is a great place.
Well, we have the chapel. We're ready to go. So, I mean, I would definitely, I mean, I actually advertised on the website that I would definitely do weddings. Pretty much, you have an idea, I can probably make it happen for you.
Wow.
So, and we're working on a huge Halloween thing for October, for the whole month of October. So that should be really fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to try. I'm going to be doing in my case, I'm doing a grand tour of the Haunted Southwest with our team. So that's going to be September, right into early October, and then we get back from that. And then I'm going to try to make it out in the spring once I have the new trailer and everything rigged up, and actually drive out your way and spend some time out there. And,
long drive, my friend. It's probably a good 4 days, four 18-hour days.
Well, you know, I mean, think about the places you would get hit on the way there and back. And I've got 25 years in my company, so I've got a lot of vacation time. And I would just time it so that it would be near a holiday or something, so I could really get the time in. But yeah, it would be a worthwhile thing to do.
Well, it's funny. I've already had teams do road trips like that. One of my first private teams that came up from Florida, and they did just that. They drove up, and they hit a couple places on the way up. They went to the Houghton Mansion in Massachusetts. They came here. They went to Waverly, and I want to say they hit Trans-Allegheny, too, and they went back to Florida. And they were just like, we get a lot of people that do that, actually.
Yeah, I think it's turning into a trend. I mean, I just started looking at it out here and thought, where do I want to hit? And I just started throwing down a list, and I said, well, you know, and then I started, doing the travel planning, and it all seemed to just gel together, you know. And so we're going to hit the, you know, we're going out to Rachel, Nevada to, sit outside the paranormal. There's some paranormal investigation there, but also just to check for UFOs on the extraterrestrial highway. And,
very cool.
Oh yeah, and I'm gonna go. I got to do the bucket list thing and stand in front of Area 51's mailbox. You know, you got to be able to take a picture and go, hey, you know. But I mean, Nevada and Arizona are just so bloody haunted. It's you got to do it once, you know, and then you can say, okay, then they've done that. But I really think these paranormal tour ideas, especially in your area, with everything, all the lists you just rattled off, you guys doing cooperative type things too, you know, between
mm-hmm.
you. That's another business.
Now,
matter, you know?
Are you doing Armagosa?
We are going to hit Armagosa. That's one of the planned stops is to do that on the way down. We're going to cruise over from. One of the stops will be Goldfield. Spend the night there, and then hop in the car and head straight out to Armagosa, and then we work our way back through Vegas, and we're going to stop and see Maury.
Great.
Lutz, so Maury is aware of everything we're up to. And maybe some of her team might join up with us, and we do some things there. But it's gonna be great. We're gonna hit Sedona, and spend some time in Sedona. I've been there twice, and you can feel something in the air there. It's just it's got a power all its own, and I've just have been aching to do EVP, and now that I've got some of these specialized cameras, we'll see what we get, you know.
Well, it's interesting because I really feel that there's all types of activity here. I mean, like, all types. I think there's, I'll tell you a couple of examples, but I think there's fairies, and I think there are trolls, and I think it's heavy with UFO and otherworldly type of activities, and even and elementals. And some of the stuff I actually have evidence of myself, or I've gotten photographs or EVPs that either allude to the fact that of those types of entities. I would like to do a UFO kind of like a night search out in the skies out here. We have three stories on our east wing, and we have solarium on three floors. And I actually got a photograph out the third floor solarium from the inside. There's no trees outside, and what it looks like is a big metal wing and a man or somebody standing out there with a cloak, like a hooded cloak. And this is three stories up, and there's nothing outside. For it to be.
Weird.
There's no trees, there's nothing. It's very strange. I don't know. I just think that it would be really interesting to try to go out and do some sky watching here and see what we could find, too.
You know, the thing that I find is it seems like these places where there's been lots of powerful human emotion and events and death seem to open up rifts, I think, in space and time in a way. And I think that not only that, I mean, you talked about the different sorts of creatures that you were talking about, trolls and, fairies and earth energies and things like that, and of course, UFOs, which I believe some of them are actually life forms. If you really get down to it, I think different sort of, they come from a different realm, and they interact with our world, and then they pop out again. And, you know, it's probably just that simple for quite a few of them. Sure, some of them may be spacecraft, but I also think by and large, the majority are going to be some form of, interdimensional thing that pops in and out that may not even be intelligent. It may just be flying around, you know, checking things out. But, you know, the one that gets to me, though, is all too often I've had the feeling, especially out here in the Sierra, we've had our own cases of these things, that you feel. When I've been out in the upper Sierra Nevadas, up near a town called Paradise, I grew up out that way, and we would go into backwoods, and you would be walking along, and you would feel like someone intelligent was watching you, and you could not shake that feeling. And you'd look all around, and there was nobody there. And you knew it was intelligent, and you knew you were the only human being in the canyon, you know, especially in some of the places we went. So I've always believed that there are these, what you would call little people, maybe existing in a shade different wavelength than we would see. And occasionally we get to see them, and most of the time not. And I think they're around. I think they are. And the old, yeah. It's just, you know, that famous TAPS video in Ireland when they first met Barry, and they went out on that case, and they got that heat, the thermal, with those three little creatures following their team. Yeah, that tells you something. That was really good evidence they got there. I mean, that wasn't manufactured stuff. That was a real deal.
No, I mean it. It's funny, and as you know, I'm sure this happens with you too, the more that you get involved in this field, you know, it's like an onion. More questions arise, but then you become more accepting of different things. Like, I mean, for me to say that there are fairies, I didn't believe in fairies. I mean, I really didn't believe in fairies until I had a couple of experiences. I actually got a photograph, several photographs, of what I believe to be a fairy, and every time I show people this photograph, they say it's a fairy. And I actually got it last year, right around this time when I came out here to look at Rolling Hills, and we stayed down the road at this inn. But before I'm jumping all over the board, we left Rolling Hills, and as I came outside, I looked over the tree line, which is the Genesee County Park, which used to be the original property to the poor farm.
Yeah.
And there was this big, weird light above the trees, and I'm like, that's not supposed to be there. It's a park. It's trees. It's land. I thought, that's really weird. Well, we went 3.5 miles down the road to the Hillside Inn where we were staying and went into our room, and the whole place was sound asleep. It was like 1:30 in the morning. We went back kind of early for ghost hunting, but we were zonked out. And so we went back to the room, and all of a sudden we hear tap, 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 tap on the window. And we're a couple stories up, and I look out, and there's this big, gigantic, like, white moth, pure snow white, 8-inch wingspan, long scallop tail, and so I put my camera up against me. I'm taking pictures. I'm seeing, I'm like, there's only a pane of glass between us. It had like a brown, rusty-colored pom-pom head. Well, what I took and what I saw are two completely different things. The photograph looks exactly like a fairy. It's translucent green. It has a face. It has arms. And everybody that looks at it says, oh, my God, that's a fairy. I'm like, yeah. It was not what I saw. I don't know what it was. And the next day, I asked the owners. I showed the owners the pictures. I asked the staff, did you ever see any white moth out there? Big, huge. No one's ever seen anything like that, ever. And that was my first real belief in fairies. And then something else happened recently, about 2 months ago. And a couple of my team members was telling me a story that happened downstairs in our Christmas tree room, which is one of our famous rooms for children. And this is a couple of years back before I got involved, but there was a documentary filmmaker here, and he wanted to do an experiment They wanted to go into the Christmas tree room without any equipment whatsoever and just get a personal experience. So they were completely dark, no equipment, and they had a couple glow sticks, and that was it. And they sat in a circle, and there were some toys on the floor, and Susie was very sensitive, was talking to the children, and as she was talking, all of a sudden a hand came up through the floor and reached for one of the toys. And everyone saw this. Of course, there's no evidence of it, but and almost into the story, and she was saying that she was communicating with the kids and talking to them, and she could feel them behind her, standing behind her, so she would reach out about behind her shoulder with her hand, like reach her hand up to her shoulder and reach for the children's hand and like act like she was helping them come into the circle so they could play with the toys. And so she would reach around and bring her hand forward and open up her hand. And everyone that was sitting around the circle said that they saw what appeared to be gold glitter when she opened up her hand. Gold glitter would like rise from her hand and like dance away. I thought, how, what a fascinating story. I mean, you know, I believe her. She's my team member. It would be great if they had evidence. But, you know, I believed her. And then I had, not a week and a half, 2 weeks after that, I was sitting in our cafe on another radio interview with a couple of my other team members. And actually, I was on a radio interview. I lied. I was on the phone with a state trooper. And all of a sudden, in front of my face was like someone took a shaker of gold glitter and went right in front of my face, like I got shaken, like a tablespoon of it, right in front of my face, and danced away. Not once, but twice. And literally, I'm on the phone with the trooper going, "Trooper, hold on a second. Oh, my God, I'm seeing the glitter. Oh, my God." And Maury, who is sensitive, has been here this year and with me and said that she's seen the gold glitter around me. So I think they're fairies. That's my long fairy story, sorry. But that I believe that they're fairies.
Well, nothing to be sorry about. I mean, that's just amazing. That's the thing is, you know, and I think that there's like different characteristics of them in different areas of the world. You know, the Irish ones, you know, have their own unique features. And yours, you know, this glitter thing, that's a new one. I've never heard of that before. You know,
if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, I just can't even. It's literally, if you took some glitter from Michael's art store and shook it in front of you, that's exactly what it looked like. Exactly. And it danced away. Just dissipated.
The only thing that would even come close to me is once I was sitting right here where I'm sitting right now in Studio B, and I was working with a friend of mine from CJ EVP. It's Christine Griffith, really competent, extremely well-known EVP researcher. She's tops in the field, and she's somebody I really look up to. And, you know, she gets all embarrassed when I say that, but it's true. She's really good at what she does. And we were doing an ITC chat where we were doing telephone bridge work. And I had something like that happen, but it was not a glitter. She was on, and she said she'd just seen a white light that crossed near her. Not 5 seconds later after she said that, I had a white light come flying from my right side to my left, not 6 inches from my face, go booking right by me and went right through the wall and was gone. And I'm going, what the hell was that? And I'm just like, you know, and it was just neat. And she goes, it must have been the same thing I was seeing. I went, yeah, it could go from Vancouver to here that quick. You know, I mean, wow.
That's amazing. Well, it's
know,
funny
but,
because, you know, the spirits tend to be really active lately, and I think they're coming, and I don't mean just here. I think that with such an onset of interest in the paranormal and so many more people becoming, making it more mainstream, I think that spirits are becoming more comfortable, maybe, in addition to being just more active. I don't know. What I'm trying to get is we had something similar like that happen here. Not too long ago, we were in the Shadow Person hallway in the East Wing, and we were using the flashlights, you know, for yes/no answers, and we had some people videotaping with a DVD recorder, and we were dealing with Roy, and Roy was answering questions and, you know, going yes and no with the lights and so forth and so forth, so on with the flashlights, and I asked her, I said, Roy, I really wish you'd let me see you when you're turning the flashlight off and on. And we all saw this and caught it on the video, and I'm waiting for them to send me a copy of it now so I can post it. We saw these light anomalies come up and hit the flashlight on, and the light would go on, and come up again and hit it, and it would go off 3 different times. And we all saw it with our eyes and caught it on video. and it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen.
I'm going to use that to, you know, I'm going to take that as something to do, you know, with our work, because, you know, we have this, we've seen stuff in the field with lights, but now that I've got this, you know, this full spectrum camera, I'm going to use that in that same way, but with the full spectrum and see what we get. I mean, it's always good to share techniques, by the way, you know, to the audience out there. You know, that's
Absolutely.
How we learn. I mean, especially, you know, yeah, you know, you do free and easy trading. You tried that? Did that work? Oh, cool. Yeah, so, I mean, and three different cameras on this thing, yeah? Three different things that, you know, folks were shooting this when this happened?
No, we saw it three different times, and well, there were people taking photographs, but there was one guy that got it on, actually, there were two people taking video, and I know one guy for sure got all three of them on the video when it occurred, and we were all seeing it with our eyes at the same time, and it was pretty phenomenal. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
That's nuts. I mean, you know, the thing that I look at that if it's the thing I'm looking at is the lights thing. You know, you see them manifest into human shapes or partial human shapes, which is really common. You know,
mm-hmm.
and then this whole the lights, and I think the light is more like their natural state of being, because they don't, you know, it's I don't think they're having to work as hard to manifest for us. You know, it's just, you know, the light is what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how we see them. I think it. Would you agree that? Do you think it takes a lot of work for them to project the old human shape? You know.
You know what? I think it does for some, but then you've got so many different entities, like the shadow people. That's. I mean, I don't know. We see shadow people here so much. I mean, and they're in full human form. They're in shadow, but they're in full human form, and they're not the typical shadow people. I know people have this conception of the shadow people wearing the fedora and the raincoat and the whole thing. They're not like that here. They're like shadows of people, and you'll see them going in and out of the doorways. You'll see them coming up the ramps. You'll see them come out and block light, and they're in the shape of a man or a woman in their shadow, and you'll see their arms and their legs and everything else, but they're not wearing the fedora. They're not the typical shadow people. I don't know. It's such an open-ended question. I mean, I think that's why it's paranormal. I do think there's a lot of entities that, yeah, I think that they're weaker, and their natural being or their natural state is to be in a light reflective or a light mode. But, I mean, then you've got the ones that are like red dots. Have you seen those red laser dots? Do you get those anyplace?
I haven't seen red laser dots. The thing we get out here are the about 8 to 12 inch wide bluish colored orbs. These things are huge. And
really?
We get these all up and down the Sierra Nevada and into Nevada itself proper. We've seen on repeated occasions these giant bluish orbs, and daytime and nighttime sightings. And it just seems to be, there seems to be features in the paranormal that are regional. And you just accept that that's the way it is in this area, and then you hear about that. That's the first time I've ever heard of a red dot. You know,
what happens here? There's this, like, these red. Sometimes they'll be green, but they look like a laser dot. And there are people that, I mean, there are no laser pointers around. You'll see them sometimes with your eyes moving up and down the walls. They'll just appear. They'll appear in your photographs. They'll appear under a desk. They'll appear in the back of someone's head. It's not the camera, because you can leave this building or leave this property and use the camera the next day and going on and so forth, and they'll never show up again for someone. So it's not the pixels in the camera, especially if you're seeing it with your eyes. There was one time that we were actually sitting in the shadow person hallway. This is before I bought the property, one of my visits out here, and there were about 10 of us in shadow person hallway, and we saw these two laser lights go zoop right across the ceiling, like race lights or something, or car tail lights, and we saw them just travel right across the ceiling, and they disappeared. I don't know what they are.
It sounds. I've been really wrestling, because I have a long background with UFO research and just looking at UFOs, and I've not been active in the community. It's just been a personal thing with me. But I've really, you know, strongly assessed UFO activity going back, you know, all the way to the 50s and 40s, and even some prehistoric type stuff, and looked at it really objectively for many, many years. And the similarities I see with UFOs versus what we get in paranormal, there's this whole cross-section of these orbs that just seem to fit in both worlds.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know how it does. I don't know what to make of it, but that I've heard of that kind of thing before. You know, paranormal teams getting these strange phenomena that just appear once or twice, and then you know you don't see it again for a long time, and then it's like they're in and out, and then that's it, and then it just switches to other more conventional things, and you know you've got earthbounds and whatever. But you know the shadow people though, you. That's the first time I've ever heard of a difference with shadow people, although in the way you're talking about. Now, out here, we have two kinds we see. We have the big ones, and then we have the ones that peek around corners that are real hard to they're fairly defined. But then we got these ones that we see here, especially on this property, that are on the order of 7 to 8 feet tall. And they they're fairly ill-defined, and they move with. If you saw the movie Ghost, remember those things that came out of the floor? You know, that's what these things look like, and they move almost the same way with short, jerky, quick movements, and they are they have definite intelligence and purpose, and they move quickly and go and they and you can tell they know you're there, but they don't really care that you're looking, and they just go booking off. And then you get these the kind you're talking about, the old classical type, which are you know, they peek around a corner and then they're gone. But this is a new class for me that you're talking about. These are actually just full on. You just see them, you know, the full form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It really is amazing. It's funny, I'm going to just go back to what you were talking about, those blue orbs. Did you ever read the book, and I might have the title a little bit off, it's either Search for Skinwalker, or I think it's Search for the Skinwalker. It's based, it's supposed to be a true story of a ranch out of Utah. And it's written by a gentleman named George Knapp. And it had supposedly well-documented UFO activity. And it actually mentions these blue orbs, and they refer to them as the blue meanies. And really horrible, horrible different activity would occur down there. I mean, it was a cattle ranch. And weird things would happen. Like all of a sudden, all the cattle would be locked up in a tractor trailer and completely chained up in there. Like they were out in the pasture, and then they're chained up in a... like in a nanosecond, basically. Or they'll go out and, like, all these weird things. Like, the cattle would be, you know, you'll see it being, like, sucked up into the air, but there's nothing sucking it up, and then it comes down, and it's completely gutted and with no blood left in it. I mean, weird things would happen around all this UFO activity. It's a really interesting book. I think if you have a chance to read it, you should really read it. It's an unnamed location in Utah.
Now, you know what's funny is I've read some pretty interesting things about, you know, the cattle mutilations, and some of it does here appear to have some conventional explanation, and here's why. It's back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s when the above-ground nuclear tests were going on, the U.S. government had a very strong interest in nuclear fallout and radiation shadows, you know, where you would have, prevailing winds would take the fallout and drop it in a particular area, and they had a great interest in measuring the radioactive decay and the the various strontium and all the different elements that were present, and what the decay rates were. And it turns out that the best way to do that would be to grab a cow, or and kill it, and then take its soft tissues like the lips, the eyes, different portions of the jaw. And do the things that these people were seeing. So some of it does seem to be that. Then you have the cases you can't explain, the laser scalpel cuts that are, who would have that? You know, I mean, we can't even do some of these things. The complete blood drain, how do you do that? You know, that's not even in the realm of doable in those short
spans. Well, how do you get 20 cattle out in the field and the next minute it's locked up in a tractor trailer? With chains around it, like literally.
Yeah,
I mean that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I just that's the part that whatever this phenomena is, it has a command of space time, and it has the ability to do things that are well beyond any conventional explanation we have. Now the thing that you have to realize too is that when you look at the defense infrastructure of the United States and, frankly, the sciences that, you know, are on the leading edge on this planet, you know, whatever government you want to talk about, they are generally 30 to 35 years ahead of where we are at any one point. So, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to have some of these capabilities developed, but why they are doing that, why they would go around and pick on a bunch of cows and then have these black helicopters and all the things that are being seen, I don't know what to think of it other than to you know, the radiation thing is one point, but what the hell is, there's an old thing called Occam's Razor that says the simplest explanation is often the correct one.
Uh-huh.
I don't think there's an explanation for this. I just don't. I don't understand what the objective is of this. You know, that's the key is, you know, after all the time I've spent looking at it and many, many others who are way more intelligent than me have looked at this stuff, and they're as mystified. They're stumped. And it's,
well, yeah, I mean, what is the purpose? I mean, they're mutilating cows. I mean, on one flip of the coin, thank God it's only cattle. And I don't mean to say that. I'm an animal lover. You know, I would make a pet out of almost anything. But, you know, thank God they're not doing it to humans, you know, as far as we know. But, yeah, but what would the purpose be if they had that kind of technology where they can, you know, do all these precise laser cuttings and drain the blood without, you know, giving any sort of, you know, evidence as to how it's being done? Their technology is pretty advanced. And so what would be the purpose exactly? I mean, it's very puzzling.
Yeah, it's to me, you know, if you have the capacity to travel, you know, across the stars or to rip space-time and actually pop into our universe, you are a race that has extremely fine understanding of technology, and you've obviously, you know, conquered the whole propulsion problem. But that also implies that you as a civilization have the ability to deal with medical technology and understand DNA inside out, and you could actually probably create your own life forms. You know,
right.
We're at that point. We actually are creating artificial life in laboratories now. A lot of people don't realize that. You can actually go look up artificial life, and you'll see the very beginnings in the human race here, that we are actually on the very fringe of being able to create an artificial life form. So, with that said,
which is frightening. Which I think is frightening. Actually.
Pardon me?
I think it's actually pretty frightening. I mean, it's amazing, but
yeah.
It's still pretty frightening.
I think, you know, you have a runaway technology that gets away from you, and all sorts of strange things go on. And I do think that if we are as prone to abuse of technology and strange behaviors and things like that, maybe it's just possible that you've got a runaway technology, you know, thing going on with some alien race that's coming through, and this is their idea. You know, maybe even cruelty. You know, who knows? I mean, it could be a thing like that. But I'm just at a loss. I mean, there's got to be a scientific objective to be doing that, to cause that kind of trauma to creatures and going and get these things that they need. Is it part of some manufacturing process? Is it something that, you know, they need that can't get any other way? I don't know, you know. But it just leaves me mystified. And the fact that, you know, rolling that back to paranormal activity, you know, crop circles and the things that go along with that, you know, that seems to, some of this seems to kind of overlap with the crop circle phenomena. It just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've wanted to see for myself a crop circle. You know, in addition, I would love to see one of these cattle things. So just to go up and look at it for myself, I've seen it from a distance. You know, sure, the stink is going to be bad, but you get, you know, the way you learn in this business, especially with paranormal, is you get off your butt and get out in the field and go look at it. You know,
yep, that's true.
It.
And I
have a strong feeling, though, that some of the things going on are actually, you know, especially with the crop circle phenomena, are a form of communication going on. Potentially
very well
outside
could be.
Agency. Yeah, or an inside agency, somebody based here on this planet, not human, trying to make their presence known to us through shapes and symbols. What are the, you know, what a lot of those shapes have relation back to mathematical features, and I just really am surprised. The one universal language that will translate across the entire universe and other universes is mathematics.
Mathematical.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, I find that intensely strange. But the thing that is striking to me is we're in talking with what's happening at Rolling Hills with these shadows. I mean, you said something to me that really struck me once. You said you could actually call them out and they would come out on command. They would
Absolutely. 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 There's this one in particular, his name is Roy. He's very prominent and very well known to this property. He was dropped off here at 8 years old by his father, who was a prominent banker in Rochester. He was dropped off here because his father was humiliated by him. And he was unfoundedly humiliated. The poor boy had giganticism. And today he'd probably be a famous basketball player, you know. But when he dropped him off at 8 years old, he was over 6 feet tall. And his father was just totally embarrassed by him, by his appearance. You know, of course, he probably had the elongated face and, you know, a very odd-shaped person. But he was very intelligent. There was nothing wrong with him other than his size. And he lived out his life here. He died when he was about 57. But some of the things that we know about Roy, that he was a very intelligent man. He read a lot. He had a whole library full of books. He also loved classical music. And he's very, very prominent here. And he makes himself known quite a bit. And you can call him out and ask him to come out. And Roy comes out, and he blocks out the light. He was over 7 feet tall at his death. And it's pretty amazing. I just had an experience with him last week where I had this one gentleman from one of the teams that were here. We had a public night, and we had about 30 people here. And we were down on the shadow person hallway, and it was just this one gentleman and myself. Everyone else was scattered around. It was late, almost towards the end of the evening. And we have solariums on our back side on all three floors. So we're on the second floor, which is the top floor of the east wing, by the solarium, probably about 25 feet away from the solarium. We had the doors closed, and there are two windows, one in each door, small little square, maybe, I don't know, 6 inches by 6 inches or so. And I was calling to talk to Roy, and Roy was walking back and forth in the solarium, blocking out the lights, sometimes blocking out both the windows. See, it was pitch black. You could see his feet moving underneath the door, and then he'd come out and he'd completely make the hallway completely pitch black. Completely pitch black. It was pretty phenomenal. One of my other team members just recently got an EVP from him, and because we play a lot of classical music for him, and he loves it. And they actually were asking him, this is like a week or so, 2 weeks ago, and said, Roy, we're going to bring you some more classical music. Would you like that? And we actually have an EVP of him saying, yes, that would be fine. So not only is he very articulate, he is a shadow person. And why would he be a shadow person? He was, you know, it kind of goes against everything we're talking about, different entities, because he was a real live breathing person. His name was Roy Cross. He's shown up on the census. One of the nurses that I mentioned earlier knew him personally. I don't know. I have no explanation why he shows up like that.
I'll tell you, I have seen more than once out in my little investigations I've done partial manifestations of spirits. I've run into, you know, full body. I've had, you know, face-to-face encounters, you know, the works. And the one that struck me the most was Virginia City, May of 2009. We were out, and I watched half a body, a torso. You know, the torso was missing. The legs came running out with the jeans attached.
I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah, and it went book and by. And then 10 minutes later, a blue orb, one of those classic Sierra blue orbs, comes flying back, following the same pathway that my sighting went. You know, it was like a residual type thing. But what struck me was this half sighting. And so that I came home from that trip, and I saw my mother, and I said, hey, you know, check out what I saw. And I told her the story, and she goes, well, let me tell you what's been happening here in the house. And I go, what? And she goes, I'm seeing the same exact phenomena here. And she started to describe a upper torso that's being seen with part of a leg.
How bizarre.
Yeah, and it's and we have family spirits who come through who make themselves visible but only in partial. You know, we have yet to see them in the full profile. And I think it just takes a lot of energy for them to do that. And for whatever reason, this is just a guess based on what you're telling me, whatever reason this is, if there's a lot of the thousands of people dead in that area and all the things that have gone on in that particular, you know, complex that you're in, there's some sort of power source. There's something there that's giving them enough energy just to casually walk around and not
It's funny you should say that. I mean, interrupt, but you're absolutely right. There is a big power grid across the street. And even Zach from Ghost Adventures, we were talking about it, and he said, absolutely, it's a feeding source. Underneath in the ground, there were salt mines all in this area. So, I mean, and then there are ley lines very close by. There's a lot of different things going on in the environment here that really, I'm sure, helps contribute to why the spirits show up here, in addition to the ones that have already had a tie to this place. I mean, Lilydale isn't that far away.
Yeah, it's just Lilydale. Lilydale is the home of modern spiritualism, if I remember right. That's the a lot of very accomplished mediums come. That whole area of New York is just weird. There's just a lot of strange things that come out. You know, there's even Bigfoot sightings in that part of the state, if I remember right. UFO stuff. You know, the Jersey Devil is not far away, and all this kind of thing. I just am not surprised to see that you're having such a unique phenomenon. It would be interesting to see if some of the other, I'm trying to think of some of the other asylums up and down the East Coast that are not far from you.
Well, there's not really that many that are open. There's Trans-Allegheny, which is in Virginia, then there's Waverly down in Kentucky, and they're all both probably about an 8 to 10 hour ride away.
Yeah, and they're not describing anything similar, you know, to what you've got. I mean, that's just, we would have heard something similar. I just wonder, you know, it's really a personality feature to your particular, you know, complex. And I think that you're getting some sort of power. To me, it's some sort of thing is powering it up, and they're just able to just feed off that, and they don't have to work too much harder. They can just get their general shape out there and like, hey, check it out. It's easy. You know, when you stay around this area, we're cool. You know, that's just a guess, but I think it's a good guess. At least it's a theory to start off with, you know. Have you tried EM pumps or anything like that?
I haven't, although one of my team members, Steve Hall, he's pretty interested in doing experiments with infrasound. And so he just put together something that he's going to try using and start tracking that with infrasound. So that's pretty much what he's working on right now. I mean, you have to remember, I've been here for 2 months, 2.5 months, and we've already accomplished so much, and we've got a lot of plans for different experiments. My team now has grown to 10, and in all honesty, we've got 4 different teams represented under one team for Rolling Hills. So we've got a lot of different levels of experience. Most of the people have years of experience in different ways of investigating. We have a psychic medium, Glenn White, he's completely phenomenal. We've got EVP people that are just amazing in EVPs. We've got sensitives. We've got the tech guys. We've got a skeptic. I mean, it's a completely eclectic group of well-educated and very talented people. And, you know, of course, you know my theory about unity. So I'm putting my money more where my mouth is, and we have, like I said, 4 different teams represented underneath one banner called Rolling Hills Asylum.
Are you in the process? I mean, I saw the work you've done on the website, and it sounds like you're building an archive of your evidence, too. I mean, you know, similar to what we've done. So you're really strongly going into the whole research phase. So it sounds like you've got a team pretty much working that.
Well, we're just getting going. I mean, like I said, there's still so much work to be done here on the property this year, you know, to make it ready for winter. And I'm hoping, talking way, way out of my real comfort zone here, but we're hoping to be able to keep the place open at least on abbreviated hours in the winter.
I'm trying to work on something to try to get some heat in here that will keep the place so people can come year-round. It may not be completely warm and cozy, but there'll at least be some warm zones. That's our plan anyway. So next year would probably be the real full force of really upping the whole investigation and documentation aspect. We're going slowly on that. I mean, there's just so much to be done. I mean, I can't tell you, Don. it's very rewarding, a very fulfilling place to be, but in any given moment, there's a million things to do.
I know the feeling. I'm refitting our ranch at the moment and going through all that stuff and then running a team and doing the things. I have a small taste of what you're going through at the moment. I mean, you're incredibly driven with this. And, you know, if anybody could pull it off and get that place, you know, turning into this thing that you're making it become, which is, you know, combination ode to the past, you know, celebration of now and research center of the future. It seems to be you.
Oh, thanks. But you know what? It isn't the Sharon Show. I could not do it without, you know, the support of everyone that's involved. I mean, you know, from Jerry, who, you know, who's really taking a leap of faith with me on this. And my team is just phenomenal. I mean, I've got amazing people that are just behind me 1,000%. I mean, it's more than, it isn't just me. It's a very much a cooperative effort from a lot of different people contributing their heart and soul because they love the place and they love the people here, the people that are still here, or whatever entities there are here. But it's really a collaborative effort, and I'm just a facilitator. I'm just a facilitator and a caretaker. I just happen to be the one that's kind of helping pulling people together, but it's really a collaborative effort.
Now, you talked about Halloween, and you know, I was just wanted to, you know, remember when we did that? You had the theater down there,
the Warner Grand.
Warner Grand. Remember, you did that live investigation down there, and I did an audio stream of because I was the only person doing this. I grabbed your audio stream.
I remember.
Remember that? And I did all those EVPs,
yeah.
And I sent this to you, and you went, "What the hell?" I was 400 miles away from them and did this audio analysis of their EVPs coming through the internet, and I got stuff. It was wild, and I sent you a whole bunch of that. And I'm just wondering, are you going to be doing that? Are you going to be doing live investigations out there and, you know, doing kind of
what you're doing? We got some internet problems. I'm out in the boondocks. I'm close to everything, but I'm out in the boondocks. We're about 35 miles east of Buffalo Airport and about 35 miles south of Rochester Airport. And the next town over is like a good 10 minutes away, 15 minutes away maybe. But I'm technologically challenged out here. I have a wireless card, and right now I couldn't even get in your chat room because I just couldn't get on the internet. So until we can figure out how to work around all this stuff, and that won't be until next year, I'm sure. But yeah, I would love to be able to do live investigations out here. I mean, it's totally in my mind. But like I said, priorities shift daily, and right now that one there isn't at the top of the list. But yeah, I would love to be able to do that. Absolutely.
When you do that, let me know, because I mean, we'll definitely throw in with you and help you out with stuff like that, even remotely out here, and some of the evidence analysis stuff too. I mean, we can you know, pipe in a little help there too, you know, with our skill sets. So I mean, I just want to get out there. I mean, the problems. I mean, I'm facing the same things you are, though. I mean, with this ranch, we had a lot of degradation going on, and I've taken over. Finally, my mother just said, "Do what you want to do," and I went to work. You know, and tomorrow we're buying a tractor. Okay. And getting,
nice.
You know, that's, oh, thank God. I've been trying to drag trees from the damage from that December storm and all that. And it's just,
no.
Oh, it's going to be, this place will be starting to shine really great. And even the spirits that we have on property, we have, you know, the woman that's buried in the north corner,
mm-hmm.
who, we call her Anna. She just seems, and she comes outside and talks outside the window occasionally. That's our little special thing. And a couple of guys that show I'm going to be doing some things to kind of give them a little nice something. Once we have the tractor, I'll be able to dig up and do a few nice things for them. But it's an eternal project, so I know what you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, and yeah, it's been kind of challenging, but we've got some really good things going on. We've got a couple of special events coming up. You know, we've got in August. Actually, we have a teen hunt. I know it's controversial, but I've had so many requests, and the previous owners used to do teen hunts, and we're doing them kind of structured. The parent has to come. It's very structured. It's like 4 or 45-minute sessions. There's 15-minute breaks in between. My team goes out with them and teaches them how to investigate. They're never left alone. And like I said, the parent has to come. And it's 13 to 17. So that's coming up July 3rd. Like I said, I went back and forth having it, but there are a lot of people that used to come already. And I think the way they did it is at least educational, and they're not having a free-for-all, and they're being taught the right way, I hope. I mean, you know, everyone has their own opinion what the right way is, but at least we're trying to at least give them some guidance on how to do it, and rather having, you know, kids like that going in and breaking into places and just doing things completely unsafe and incorrect, at least we're giving them a place with their parents' approval, of course, on how to learn how to investigate. So that's coming up on July 3rd. We've got the August 14th event with Stacey Jones and Glenn White, and that's going to be pretty amazing. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. October's coming up, so.
Right, and even the winter, possible winter opening, or at least for as much until the snow really gets you in, and then because I know it snows like hell there.
Yeah, do we have to talk about that? I mean, I'm already missing the beach every now and then, and I'm going to be like losing my mind come January or February.
I just have this feeling that you're going to be sitting there watching, you know, The Shining, you know, with Jack Nicholson in the middle of the winter.
Stop! That's what Stacey always says to me. She goes, "Oh my God, you're going to pull a Jack Nicholson. You're going to pull a Shining." I'm like, "Thanks."
Oh,
no.
Play make Sharon a dull girl. Oh,
oh
yeah.
God.
Here's Johnny.
That would be terrible.
Well, hey, you know what? We blew through an hour and a half here. We got 3 minutes remaining, and and I just wanted to thank you for coming on and talking about all the stuff that's going on with Rolling Hills, and we'll definitely have you back on again real soon. You know, when you can get some tone away from all your projects.
Yeah, I know, you know, it'd be great because I know you were doing those live EVP experiments. We should do that here.
I would love to do a cooperative with you on that. If you wanted to do a live EPP with Rolling Hills in a combo with what we're doing, I would think that would be
awesome.
Yeah,
I think it would be really
fun.
Let's do that.
Sounds good. I'll tell you what. Let's set up a date for that, and we'll do that in the coming month or so, huh?
Excellent. Well, I hope you feel better, friend. And I hope your dad does better. I just lost John completely.
Yep. So we're gonna go curl up and relax a little bit and call it a night. But I toughed it out, and thank you everyone for coming on with us. We have Amethyst72, Carol is with us, Kathy with her big boot button is here. Thank you, Kathy, for coming in. Caesar's Ghost, we have Dominica Amore and Elizabeth Rose, Karen Stream, Karen out there, Karen and Elizabeth both out in near the Phoenix area, out in the mystical land of Arizona, and we have Mystic Girl 34, and to all the lurkers out there also listening in, thank you for being part of this broadcast tonight. So with that said, thank you, my friend, for coming on again, and I hope when you get out this way, I see you in person here soon, or I'll get out your way and see you in person. So.
Well, thanks for having me on, and thank you, everyone, for listening, and big hugs to you, and you'll probably make it out here before I make it back there.
Okay. I'll be driving out there with the research vehicle in tow, and we'll combine capabilities. So
I want to see that teardrop. Dying to see that teardrop.
You'll get to see it, my dear.
Okay,
you'll
sweetie.
Get to see it. Okay.
Great. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sharon. See you later.
Okay.
Good night. Good night. And that was Sharon Coyle of Rolling Hills Asylum. Just an amazing, amazing person with a really great command of the paranormal. Somebody I look up to, and she's just a dynamo. I don't know if I could do the things she does, but she talks about how busy I am, and I look at her and go, huh? Anyway, we are going to go ahead and call it a night, and I will be on tomorrow. Tomorrow I am going to be on at 8:30 Pacific on Elizabeth Rose's show. Elizabeth, if you could post your link, I think it's ztalkradio.com, I think it is. And so I'm going to be a guest on Elizabeth's show and talking about some of the GRI's paranormal things, and we will be doing that. So we got about 9 seconds left, and I will be seeing you guys then. And then Sunday, our regular show, we have a special guest coming on there also. And with that, we're off the air. Goodbye, everybody.
You are listening to Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, coming to you from the Haunted Studios here in Shingle Springs, California, live on blogtalkradio.com.